Greetings, troubled listeners. Welcome back to the Troubled Men Podcast. I am Renee Coleman, sitting once again in Snake and Jake's Christmas Club Lounge in the heart of the Clempire with my co-host, the original troubled man for troubled times and future mayor of New Orleans, Mr. Manny Chevrolet. Welcome, Manny.
Hey, man.
Hey.
What's happening? You know, listen, we're here at the club and they're playing Hall & Oates.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a shame what's happened to those two guys. They hate each other.
Yeah. Well, they've been together for a long time. Yeah. You know, they got a lot of water under the bridge.
Yeah, I guess so. But they made some great music. One of the greatest bands ever.
Well, you know,
that music history.
Yeah,
pop music.
Well, you know that Daryl Hall is quite a great singer. You know, so he's got a great voice.
And Oates is talented too.
Sure,
man.
Sure.
You know, everyone needs an Oates to their hall.
Okay.
Kind of like me and you, man.
Yeah.
You know, I'm the talent and you're the Oates.
Is that right? Is that what you think? It's pretty funny.
Yeah. It's
but,
great.
But well, I'm glad you think that, man. It's please continue operating under that assumption.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's a lot of times, like, you know, they'd say to Daryl Hall or like a Tom Petty, you know, it's like, why do you need these other guys? And they're like, well, because if I didn't have them, I'd be all by myself. You know, it's like people like
and
being.
What's wrong with being by yourself?
Well, a lot of people like the company. They like they don't want to be like a.
Do you think it's sick to want to be alone?
No, but I understand people not wanting to be alone. I like the company myself. You know, I like a sort of group environment where, you know, you have people to bat things off of, people that you know, you trust. You trust their aesthetic. You trust their advice. And, you know, you don't have to be on guard with them. So I understand the appeal of an Oates, you know, even just as company.
Okay. Well,
all right.
I don't know where you're going with that.
Sure, sure.
Anyway.
Well, Manny, right after we did the last podcast, we lost one of the greats. We didn't talk about it on the
who's that?
Richard Lewis.
Yeah, he was a good guy.
He's tough, man.
Yeah.
Well, I know you'd been watching the season of Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Yeah.
And
but he was always very sickly, you know, that guy.
Well,
you know, so but he died at 77 or 76. He had been sick for a long time.
Right,
you know?
Right. Well, he wasn't looking great, the last few episodes.
Yeah, he wasn't looking great. And
kind of cadaverous.
You know, I think I brought this up last episode. It's like, you know, that phrase, they died before their time.
Right, I was going to ask
you. I think it was time for him to die.
Okay, so he did.
Yeah, he died at the right time.
Okay, it wasn't before his time.
No, at his time. I just don't get that phrase, died before their
time. Right, right,
right. It's just like, you die, you die. You're dead, you know.
It does seem like your time.
Yeah, it is his time, and he had a good time.
Oh,
he was a big coke fiend and
sure.
a meth fiend. He did meth for like years.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, he was a big meth fiend and alcohol, and he liked the women, too. He loved the women.
Okay.
And so he'll be missed. You know, he had that neurotic comedy that was big, and you know, for him in the 80s. He made a lot of money doing that.
Sure.
And a lot of people don't know this, but he did a sitcom with Don Rickles. In the early 80s, he did a sitcom with Rickles where they played like, Rickles played his grandfather or his father or something like that, and they lived together, and they were raising Richard Lewis' son, who was like 6 or 7, but there was no mom.
Mm-hmm.
And a typical Rickles sitcom, it died. It got canceled like after 6 episodes. You know, Don Rickles, for being the funniest guy ever, one of the greatest comedians ever, his sitcoms never lasted. Never lasted. Like CPO Sharky. Remember that in the 70s?
Yeah, yeah.
Where he played a naval drill sergeant?
Right.
Hilarious show. It
yeah,
got
I remember
canceled
watching
after
that.
Like 8 weeks. They just said, for some reason, Rickles, you know, it just didn't work for him. That's why his stand up's the shit for him, you know.
Yep.
Anyway, yeah.
All right, well.
So, yeah, we lost Richard Lewis and. He'll be missed.
Yes.
To some people.
Well, another guy that you didn't know but passed away last week was a New Orleans band leader, Jimmy Maxwell, and he for years had played all the Mardi Gras balls and a lot of the society functions, a lot of the debutante things, and tons of parties, but he had you know, a big band to, you know, a small combo. Sometimes during Mardi Gras, I'd have two and three bands out on a night, and so many New Orleans musicians have gone through that band. You know, a lot of guests that we've had here in the past,
and they've all ripped him off.
No. Well, no. He would get young guys going through, coming out of, or in Loyola Music School. You know,
so he'd rip them off.
Well, he would hire guys that nobody else was hiring, because they just have to sit and be able to read the book and play the parts on their instrument, and so they got some.
When you say the book, do you mean the Bible?
The music.
He was a religious guy.
The Book of Music. No, the Book of Music.
So it was a music Bible.
Read the tenor parts. Yeah. Like so when you have when you're playing like second tenor or something in the big band, they have a whole folder, giant fat folder of all your parts, and that's the book.
If you're a second tenor, it's not, you're kind of jealous of the first tenor, right?
Well, usually it's first alto, second tenor, third alto, fourth tenor, or sometimes they'll just have a Barry. So it has to do with how the
a Barry,
a baritone.
Oh,
saxophone.
Baritone. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
So it has to do with there's not a first tenor. The second tenor is the lead tenor. The way it has to do with the way the parts are voiced. But anyway, gave all these guys experience, and a lot of guys that are having big careers now, when Jimmy passed away, they're like, oh man, I have fond memories about playing with Jimmy, and it was an excellent opportunity for young guys to play with older musicians. Like, for instance, Jimmy's father, when I first was playing with Jimmy, his father, Ed Maxwell, was a drummer, and he was probably in his 70s at the time. I was like in my 20s, but you know, you had guys who played in a style that would never exist again. So these musicians got to be around these guys, hear these stories from the 40s and 50s of, you know, how the music business used to be in New Orleans. So it's this this kind of institutional knowledge would
and
be
passed
on. And
these are the guys who introduced you to heroin, right?
No. That
no?
Was, no, I figured all that out on my own. That was,
maybe
that was
vodka.
That was a different bunch of guys. Yeah.
Okay. So he's dead.
So Jimmy passed away, so he will
Did
be missed.
Did you go to his funeral?
They haven't had his funeral yet. I'm still waiting
so
to
Catholic,
hear.
So he's probably Catholic.
I'm sure Jimmy was Catholic,
So they're waiting for the latest they can wait to bury.
Well, we'll see. I will attend, and that will be quite a collection of musicians there at Jimmy's
funeral. And junkies,
funeral.
Too.
No,
right?
I don't think so. It's not really
of musicians and junkies.
Not really a dope scene.
And ex-hookers.
No, not really. The society band scene is not really the same there. Well, moving on. So last week you were talking about the movie Priscilla that recently came out.
Yes.
Sofia Coppola.
Yes.
Picture that was on, wherever that was on.
It was on TV.
Netflix or something, or one of those, one of the streaming services. But so I watched it this week.
Uh-huh.
And something you didn't mention is the guy that they got to play Elvis is about 10 feet tall. He's freakishly tall. It's that guy from the tall actor from Euphoria, and he was also in that Saltburn movie. It's kind of the it boy these days.
Oh, I don't know. But he's pretty tall.
He's really tall. I mean, Elvis was like kind of, you know, 5'11", 6 feet on a good day, and you get this guy's like 6'5", and then they had the girl who was playing Priscilla was actually very tiny, probably even smaller than Priscilla, and you have him.
Well, maybe that was Coppola was trying to make a point.
Right? Somebody else said that. Yeah.
Make a point about where Elvis is domineering. He dominated her life, you know, from day one. You know, from
right,
being
towering
German,
over
yeah,
her.
Towering
yeah,
towering over
okay,
her.
Okay, all right. Well, if that's the case,
he was very tall, and she was very tiny. But I would have loved to seen the sex, man. I would have loved to seen them banging away at each other, that little petite little thing, man. It would have been fun. And I think your friend Jimmy probably would have liked to see it, too.
Okay.
You know, dirty old man that he was.
It's not a dirty old man, but I think Jimmy might have enjoyed that film as well.
Yeah. So after seeing that, you understand my whole point last week about
the Elvis accent.
Yeah, all these great actors over the years have all tried to do Elvis, you know. Mm. You know, and to me, the only one who's ever really nailed Elvis was Jodie Foster. Jodie Foster nailed Elvis.
I have not seen Priscilla.
In Silence of the Lambs.
In Silence of the Lambs.
Oh, oh. Yeah.
Right, Dr. Right. Lecter. Thank you very much, Dr. Lecter.
Yeah.
Dr. Lecter. Quick pro quo, Dr. Lecter. You know?
I don't remember that either.
It's check it out. No, it's on the television every year.
Right, right, right.
That movie.
Silence of the Lambs. Yeah, yeah. That was a good call, man. I appreciate that. Some penetrating analysis there.
Yeah.
Well, anything else? You got something?
Yeah, I do. You know, we just came off of Super Tuesday.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Super. I don't know what's super about it. I had nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
You know?
A lot of states at once.
It's all these states voting in these primaries or caucuses.
Right.
Yeah. You know,
I love that word, caucuses.
It's only a couple of caucuses, the rest are primaries.
You know,
but
anyway, Trump, the biggest disappointment ever, if you ask me, Trump.
You expected more from him.
Yeah, I expected more from that guy.
Right.
And Biden, who's, you know, basically 3 feet under right now, if you ask me, they're gonna do a rematch.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, they're gonna do something like that, and I think it's all gonna be fun. You know, it's gonna be fun. We'll have a lot of material.
You have a lot of material, yes.
Yeah, exactly. We'll have a lot of material, which we don't get too political on this show.
No.
Mercifully.
We don't get too political.
Everybody gets enough of that outside.
Yeah, but I found this hilarious.
But you are a politician, Manny. So.
I am.
Marginally speaking.
Yeah, exactly.
Nominally.
You are in politics, I should say.
Yeah. What the hell is that picture right there? That's weird. What is that picture?
I don't know. We'll dig into that a little bit later on.
But anyway, I heard that the estate of Sinbad O'Connor, the singer, they have asked Trump to stop using her song.
Nothing compares to you. Mm-hmm.
Which I find so hilarious. It's like he's playing this song while he goes before he goes out and talks to his constituents.
It's so weird. What a weird choice.
Yeah, it's a weird choice for him. I mean, is he just ejaculating over himself? You know, nothing compares to me. Look at me, everybody. Look at me.
But even
he's kind of right, actually.
Well,
he has a point. Right?
Yeah.
I don't blame her though for not wanting to use it. So.
But it's a great Prince song and stuff like that. I'm sure Prince would not want him using that song. But I just found it hilarious that, you know, Sinead O'Connor would not want him to use that song. And I don't blame her. You know, I don't blame her either.
No, her
Who
estate.
Else? The Eagles actually asked him to stop using the song.
It seems like I don't know anybody that says, yes, Trump, please use my song.
I think Jimmy Michaels is okay with using the songs.
Who's that?
The guy who just died.
No. Well, you know, it's the guy proud to be an American. That guy.
I was going
to
say. Yeah, I couldn't think of his name.
Yeah, I can't think of it either.
Is it Norman something?
No, Bruce Springsteen.
No, not him.
Not him.
Everybody knows what I'm talking about. He's actually a saxophone player.
Gonna stand
well
up.
A singer. Yeah, that guy.
John Cougar Mellencamp.
And then that other guy that had all the comical songs. He's a
Weird Al. Yeah,
Weird Al.
No. The guy before that, before Weird Al, he's into Trump anyway.
The Knack.
He's into Trump. He said.
Not Weird Al. The
Dr. Demento.
No, not Dr. Demento. No. What's this guy's name? Ray Stevens.
Oh, Ray Stevens.
Oh,
he's the country guy.
He's kind of country, like humorous country. You know, he had all those funny songs.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't country all humor?
Well, sometimes it's very sad.
Very sad.
Ray Stevens is a big Trump supporter. Well, speaking of music, Manny, had some news this week. A festival that was dear to our hearts, Chaz Fest, has been resurrected. Hasn't
really?
They haven't had Chaz Fest since 2017, since they sold the truck farm there on St. Claude Avenue.
One of the worst festivals ever.
Well, many people would disagree. And in fact, you actually played Chaz Fest, I remember, and I played it many times.
Yeah, I didn't get paid for it either.
Played many times with the Geranium, so they're rebooting Chaz Fest at the Broadside venue there.
Perfect.
Yeah. No. So they have the new indoor venue, the smaller one, the big outside stage. So they're going to have that. The weekend, the Friday in between French Quarter Fest and Jazz Fest. That's going to be Friday, April 19th from 2 p.m. to 2 a.m.
Oh, so
a lot of
wow.
A lot of the classic Jazz Fest acts, like Morning 40 Federation, Valparaiso Men's Chorus. The remaining Geraniums are even going to play. We're gonna do a set.
You and Jeff are going to do a set?
Me and Jeff. Malcolm Burns coming down. Some other people are going to jump in and assist. So, yes, we'll be resurrecting the Chaz Fest as well as, you know, having a Geraniums appearance. Happy Talk will be there. Malavitas. Narcissi, so that's
you know who
be
won't
fun.
Be there? Me.
Okay.
That's the person who won't
right,
be there.
I didn't see your name on the bill, so.
Well, I wasn't going to go anyway.
Sure.
I won't pay to get in. I'm not
sure.
Going
no, there. I wasn't expecting you there.
Yeah,
maybe,
well, you have fun with the remaining Geraniums.
Thank you. Well,
now, how is that going to happen? You're going to sing?
Well, no, Jeff will be singing. I guess maybe Malcolm may sing a few tunes, and we may have a couple of...
Now, who's going to be drumming, since your drummer's dead?
I think Doug Garrison is going to fill in for him, which Doug played our final gig with Brendan, which was the last gig at Circle Bar.
Now, who's going to drink Canada Dry? Who's going to sing that song?
I'm not sure if we'll do that. We'll have to see what
the... About Connie's Girl. Who's going to sing Connie's Girl?
Yeah, we'll have to see. We'll have to see how it all parts out and what material we wind up doing. But that was heartwarming that they're going to get that back together. Well, there's some political news today. You know, Jeff Landry's now the governor. They had the special session in the legislature. Yeah. They had a bunch of crime bills that were passed. Did you see that?
Yeah, I heard about that. So basically, it's going to be Wild Wild West here.
Right.
It isn't already.
So
Wild,
yes, they passed the concealed carry law. Anybody can walk around with a gun in their waistband.
Yeah, can't wait for that.
That's going to be a big improvement here.
Yeah.
Also, they're expanding the execution methods.
Good.
Saw that. So you're going to have bring back.
They should televise executions. That's
okay.
The way I feel.
All right. That would certainly be a deterrent, I guess, to watching TV.
But the ratings would be great, man. Don't you think the ratings would be great?
Some people would tune in. Some people would tune
out. I definitely would not.
I would,
skip that.
Yeah. It's
try to find Priscilla that night.
There you go. So they're going to bring back the electric chair. They also are introducing this new one they came up with, nitrogen asphyxiation. They just used it on this guy in Alabama a few weeks ago. But they pump in nitrogen. And apparently what that makes people do, the poor guy's like trying to hold his breath and not breathe in any nitrogen. Took like 20 minutes. And I'm thinking, well, gee, where's all these things? Like, is a hose from the tailpipe to the window far behind? You know, it's like that seemed to always work, you know?
I say bring back public executions like the guillotine. Just bring them back, man.
I always keep trying to come up with a newfangled execution device. They can't seem to get it right after thousands of years. They're still fumbling.
Well, there used to be a show called A Thousand Ways to Die. You ever see that show? It was
not,
on the
no,
Vice
I
Channel.
No, I don't remember that
was a hilarious show where there was actually like people who, these are documented stories, that they found a way to die this way. There's like 1,000 ways to die. I mean, you get heart attack. Uh-huh. There's people. There's one episode I watched. This young couple couldn't find a room to go fuck, so they decided to go fuck behind some 7-Eleven. And they got too close to some kind of electrical thing, and they electrocuted each other while fucking.
Mm.
You know?
Okay.
That's not two ways to die.
Yeah, yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, I think, no one, you know, the problem with death penalty is what if they get it wrong, you know?
You mean they had the wrong, so an innocent person gets killed. Yes,
exactly.
That's sure
it's
happened.
That's a problem.
Oh, yeah. Especially when you rely on eyewitness testimony. You know, people seem to think it's the most persuasive thing in the world, where it's actually the most unreliable thing in the world.
But in some ways, you know, everybody should die, you know, in some ways.
Well, everybody they will.
Yeah. That's nobody gets out alive, as they say.
Yeah. Anyway, anything else you got going here? All right, let's introduce this guy.
All right, sounds good.
Because he seems like a cool guy.
Oh, yeah, yeah, he's a sweetheart.
Yeah.
This is the guy I've been knowing my whole professional life since I was a kid playing music, a teenager. He's an excellent drummer, pianist, one-time stockbroker, turns out. has a storied career. We're going to get into all that, but without further ado, the great Mr. Charlie Kohlmeier. Welcome, Charlie.
Thank you, Renee.
Yeah, man.
Wonderful introduction.
Yeah.
Partly true, but...
Oh, well, you know, I like to make a big
embellish
splash
as much as you want.
Sure, man. So Charlie, so we first met, I think I was in high school or college, mm-hmm. and you're just a few years older than mm-hmm. me, but you had just come back from Berkeley, I guess, or from
Boston?
New England Conservatory. Yes. Okay. Yeah. All right, we want to get into all that, but so you are actually from New Orleans. You're a New Orleanian. So what
on my father's side.
Right, okay. What part of the city did you grow up in?
Born on Melodia Court. Then lived on Pearl Street right over here for till I was 7 or 8.
And Pearl Street, is that like in the Black Pearl?
Yeah, it's the first block off of St. Charles on the riverside of St. Charles. So we lived between Cherokee and Milledon. So used to go to the Piggly Wiggly there on the corner, St. Charles and Cherokee, where restaurants go to die in the last 30 years. But anyway, and my mom's from Cincinnati, but my father's side is from here. So.
Okay. So where'd you go to school?
I went to Newman, 13 years.
Okay. Oh, you went to Newman the whole
time, kindergarten all the way through.
Okay, so you're
squeaked through at the
folks
end.
Had a little bit of dough
It wasn't $30,000 back then or whatever it is now.
Sure,
but yeah,
sure.
But no, my father went there, my grandfather went there, his siblings went there.
Wow, okay, so a long line
I'm
of coal
I'm related to
miners.
Isidore, and my father's mother was related to Isidore.
Really?
Yes.
Wow,
yes. So,
okay.
So I'm a Newman, too.
Oh, no.
Used to parade us up there for Founders Day. And
didn't realize that.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
I would embarrass my grandmother.
Well, you know, that the Newman School at one time, like the precursor, or it was like the Jewish...
Home for Jewish orphans.
Orphans yes. home. Mm-hmm. Yeah, 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 yeah.
But my grandparents weren't. They weren't orphaned, but...
Okay.
Yeah.
Right on. But so your that side of your family's been here for a long time, huh?
Yeah, on my father's side, yes.
And when did they get here?
I think the Herman Kohlmeier, which is, he came in 1848, and the Newmans were here, I think, in the 1830s or something like that.
Uh-huh. Where'd the Kohlmeiers come from? Germany?
From Munich, yeah.
Okay.
His grave is on the Jewish cemetery on Canal Street, not far from me.
Oh, right on.
At the foot of Canal Street. The other foot of Canal Street.
Sure, sure, sure.
Not the song foot, the...
Right. Coming up at Newman, you were already interested in playing music. What's your first kind of
Well,
musical?
I tapped on things forever. My grandfather loved music, and he gave me a drum set when I was for my 10th birthday.
Okay.
So, a set of Zimgars from Werlein's, and get up and play them every morning with my windows open. Probably drove the neighbors crazy. And, yeah.
Now, so, were you playing piano at that time already?
No.
Okay.
No, that's much later.
Did Newman have a band program?
Yeah, we had a band, the Goomas. You ever heard of them?
No.
They were the band director. His
Like Mike Gooma?
Yeah, Mike Gooma was our band director. And before that, his father, Alphonse, I think it was. Anyway, there were a few of the Goomas around.
See, now that's
great
a
name.
Perfect. Yeah, it is a great Italian name.
Yeah, well, I loved band. Even though we had a terrible band, it wasn't that good of a band, but... You know, but Torkanowski was in that band. He's 2 years ahead of me.
Really? What was he playing?
Peter Wohlbred, he'd started the new Leviathan. He was in it. And anyway, he was playing saxophone, Torkanowski was.
Oh, okay.
And Wohlbred played trumpet. And
okay, so you've known Torkanowski your whole life, pretty much.
Since I was probably 13, 12, 13. Yeah.
Right on.
Yeah. He hadn't changed.
Yeah.
He would say that, I'm sure.
Yeah, yeah. Most of us don't really change. I haven't.
But he's an extremely talented person.
Absolutely, absolutely. Very gifted. Are you playing in bands in high school?
I started playing in bands around 15, maybe. I think that's when I met Nikki. Somebody
Nikki
dragged
Sonsenbaum.
Yeah, right.
Right.
I think that's what I saw you at his funeral and everything. And I think that's. And through him, I became acquainted with the early Klempire and, you know, Newt Cranston and Dave and
just from the neighborhood, huh?
No, I don't know from the neighborhood, but
from playing music uptown.
I think a lot of it was through. You know, Hank Mackey knew all these guitar players were around him.
Right,
and
Hank.
So.
It was Filiberto's World of Strings.
Oh, okay.
Right,
that part I didn't know.
Where he taught out of, on Harrison Avenue.
Right. But so I met a lot of guys. I'm not quite sure how I made that connection, but anyway, from starting around 15, I knew musicians, not from Newman.
Were you into playing jazz? Or?
Yeah, primarily I was a little jazz bow when I was 15 or 16. I'd been through rock before that, but jazz is what really got me going there.
Yeah, so who were you listening to? Like modern jazz?
I loved Miles Davis, but I also really liked, what then was soul jazz and stuff. I really liked Horace Silver and Ramsey Lewis and stuff like that.
Right.
And Grover Washington.
Les
that
McCann.
Stuff came out. Yeah, Les McCann. Yeah. To this day, still really like
it.
And like playing that stuff, too.
Right, right. It's very cool. Like, they would make those records that would be, you could hear glasses clinking in the background. You know, they had that live nightclub feel to them, a lot of those soul jazz records.
Yeah, I've never really grown out of nightclub music, but
I hear you, man. Me either.
It's fine with me, but
right. Well, yeah, we're still here.
Yeah,
you graduate from Newman.
From Newman, and then I went to New England, and I've done some gigs around here. The Birchalls. I was playing weddings when I was like 17.
Yeah, Mike and Jimmy Birchall.
Yeah, their first cousin Steve.
Oh, Steve Birchall. He was a saxophone player and piano player.
Right, and he had a little band, and I played in that band, and played out in Fat City when I was 17 and stuff. And
okay.
Eddie Saper comes in the bar, and he recently passed away too. But anyway.
Dropping like flies.
Yeah, and then I went to Boston. There weren't many music schools back then. There was Berkeley, New England, which had a pretty small jazz department.
I mean, it really didn't. You couldn't get a jazz degree at New England at that time.
No, you could.
You could?
Yeah.
Okay.
But it was only, it was about 4 years, 4 or 5 years old. And then Gunter Schuller, I think, started it. And then there was Miami and North Texas. I think that was pretty much it.
Right.
And
I
didn't even want to go to school, but my parents really wanted me to go to school.
Now, how did you like New England?
I really didn't like it, actually.
Yeah.
I mean, it was great because you could practice and you'd hear everybody, honing their craft and everything. So that part of it I liked, but the music was a little too serious for my taste. So I didn't
like it. Why do you think places like Massachusetts, New England are places to go to for jazz? Why are they the number one thing to go to for
jazz?
Well,
I'm not sure. I think that Gunter Schuller may have been associated with Newman Conservatory some other way.
Who?
Gunter Schuller. He was like he had done Ellington revivals and things like that. I don't know that much about him, but he wanted to start a jazz program. And so it was one of the first ones that...
And was he involved in Boston Pops or something?
My teacher was. Teacher was the drummer in the Boston Pops. So,
all right. You had good instructors there?
Sort of.
Yeah.
You're
not mentioning his name, so...
No. I liked him. Fred Buda, but Guma Buda, it's a theme here. But it was very practical kind of stuff. You didn't talk about music per se, some teachers, like Bob Moses, started teaching there after I left, mm-hmm. and apparently you'd go in and you'd talk a lot,
Yeah.
At least that's what I've heard.
Yeah, I remember the first time the Iguanas played in Cambridge, mm-hmm. We opened for Bob Moses at Johnny D's, that place there in Somerville.
Oh, okay.
And he's a very spiritual cat, Bob Moses.
Uh-huh. I think it was. I heard an interview with Billy Martin where he said they'd just sit and talk for a long time or something.
Yeah.
I think so.
Great player.
Yeah.
Billy Martin, the baseball player?
Billy Martin, the manager. He's the player. No, the drummer in Modesky Martin and Wood, I think.
I don't know that band.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're up there. You actually wind up graduating from...
No, it didn't make it.
But
quit going after about 3 semesters. Yeah, I did. And I took a job playing at the Vogue Lounge in Saugus and played for Al Vega and his assorted guest vocalists, which wore a ruffled shirt and everything and 4 nights a week. and did little parties and stuff, you know, kind of like you were saying that Jimmy Maxwell would hire guys out of music school. Mm-hmm. They had the same thing going in Boston. So I'd end up doing, you know, parties. What did they call them up there? GB.
Yeah, gigs, general
what
business.
They call, right, that's what they call them up there.
Yeah, GB
they
gigs,
call them casuals in L.A., I think, and club right. dates in New York. And but in
they
Boston,
call them
it was GB.
Society gigs here
society
for some
gigs,
reason.
Right.
Yeah, even though it's
right.
often not very close to society.
right. Well, Jimmy Maxwell was. But,
well, yeah, yeah,
yes,
yeah.
But,
right. Tuxedo gigs.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Tuxedo gigs,
yeah, yeah,
yes.
Right. So, but then you come back down to New Orleans.
Yeah, I came down.
Tired of the cold weather.
So that was 76 to 79. I was in Boston. I came back in the summer of 79 and started playing at Tyler's with James Rivers like a month after I got back.
Nice.
And it was. And I love James.
That must have been when I first saw you play because I would go to Tyler's all the time and I saw James play many times, saw his band play many times.
Yeah, it was. We played every Friday and Saturday night, and I got to play with a lot of other people there. It was really great. Red Tyler and Willie T and George
yeah.
French and Irvin Charles and
yeah, man,
you know, like, those guys. Irvin Charles, I mean, pleasing
all those guys. Everybody
all
just
great.
Named. Yeah.
Now, what instrument do you play again?
Drums.
Okay.
Back then, it was strictly drums.
Oh,
you know?
Okay.
But yeah, we met. I think the first time we met was with Stuart Rembert. It's the first time I remember that we played together. He was a piano player.
Like at somebody's house?
No, I remember us doing a rehearsal. Might have been in my little one-room house on 6th Street.
Okay, I remember.
You were a very quiet youth. I do remember that.
Okay, well, I was just trying to soak it all in. Everybody was older than me. So
yes, exactly.
I was still keeping my mouth shut. At times.
Now he won't shut up.
Now he won't shut up.
Now you run a podcast.
Right. Tyler's was quite a scene in those days, man. They
had
great bands playing 7 nights a week.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of cocaine running through there.
Quite a bit. I did not participate in that, but yes.
Well, you can talk about it then.
Well,
you don't have anything to hide.
No, one night we went up to so-and-so's apartment, and I was like, oh, this is what's been going on. So,
right.
You know,
yeah, I think a lot of those guys were getting paid in blow, you know?
Yeah, I think so.
More or less, or at least they would quickly turn their paycheck back into something consumable.
It was a crazy place there.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, a lot of people sat in. We, you know, James Booker sat in with us. Toussaint sat in with us and stuff. It was very cool, like, you know.
Oh, man. I saw so many great musicians.
And I didn't know anything. Like, you know, James would play. He'd always end the gig with Second Line, mm-hmm. which he recorded with Senator Jones.
Right.
And a lot of the version you hear is him. And mm-hmm. and I was like, well, why are we playing Rock Around the Clock? And,
yeah,
you
right.
know, I didn't know what it was, you know, for like a year, even though we played. I loved playing it. But,
So you had somewhat of a cloistered New Orleans upbringing at Newman there. You had
it was before OZ. Like, you didn't really hear this stuff, you know.
Right.
Like, and so, you know, I played with George French and Willie T, and they're playing Oop Oop A Doo. I'd never heard it, you know.
Okay.
It goes ring the bell, and George points with the bell of the cymbals, you know, hit the bell, you know, and stuff with us. So.
Okay, so you kind of backed into it.
Yeah,
even
I backed
into it.
Even
though you grew up in New
Orleans,
you were, again, coming from a different little microcosm.
Yeah.
But
those guys were all sweet to me, so.
Sure. Well, you played so well, you know.
There were so many guys
that
weren't doing those gigs. I was like, why am I doing this? But I was grateful. I was lucky to get to do it.
Well, Manny, I'm looking at our drinks, and maybe we should take a little break right now.
Yeah, it's time for The Nation Knows What to Do. We'll be right back.
And we're back. Back with Mr. Manny Chevrolet. I am Renee Coleman, back with our guest, Mr. Charlie Kohlmeyer. Now, Charlie, I know that you are a longtime listener and supporter of the show.
It is true.
We do appreciate that. So you're familiar with the model we're operating under, the listener-supported model.
I haven't been a listener-supporter.
You are, and you're not alone. And we want to thank
all. But that's not why you got me on here.
No, that's not why we got.
Not payola for
that. I didn't even remember that you had supported us, but we do appreciate it. But this week, some people I for sure remember just supported us this past week, and some big fans of Stan Berto that we had on a couple of weeks ago, and it was his good buddy Todd Erlinson, who works at Tulane. Todd bought us a round of drinks. Want to thank Todd. And also Lisa Rosenbaum came up and bought us several rounds of drinks. So they got to us through the Venmo link, and we also have the PayPal link, and both of those are in the show notes of every show, and as well as the Facebook page. Let's see, we also have the Trouble Men podcast t-shirt, which we had a couple of purchases this week, so that those are live. If anybody wants to jump on the bandwagon and get a t-shirt, you'll get it quicker this week than you may some other weeks. Also, follow us on social media, Instagram, Facebook. Rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast wherever you're listening to it. Give us 5 stars. Helps us a lot. Costs you nothing. Want to present Charlie, our guest, with some Trouble Men podcast stickers that we have here.
Nice.
Also, the supporters. That's another expense that we have. The stickers. I always have those to give out to people, and they always appreciate them. Iguanas Date's coming up in the Midwest with Sonny Landreth. You can find those on iguanas.com. We'll be going out the last week in March, first few weeks in April, up into the Midwest. Okay, so enough of that. Back to you. Charlie Kohlmeyer. Back to our guest. So you're playing around New Orleans, playing at Tyler's with James Rivers.
Yes.
Then somehow you get involved with some Wall Street business. Now, how does that happen?
Well, that's through my grandfather and father. That's what they did.
Okay.
And my great-grandfather, too. And my grandfather, who I was really close to, was always bugging me, you know, you got to come back. You should come to work, you know.
So they had some sort of trading business.
They brokered futures trades.
Oh, okay.
So cotton futures was their specialty, but they did other stuff too. And
so that you were familiar with that business just through osmosis?
No, not really.
A little bit.
No, not at all. Actually, no. They'd had a business and they lost it in '73, I think, and then so we're talking about we're up to '82 here.
Mm-hmm.
So, After James, I played on Bourbon Street for a while with Betty LeVette and Phil Parnell. And
Phil Parnell, another great
Batiste,
piano player.
The great Sababa. I don't know if you remember him, the percussionist. He was awesome. Anyway, and then that came to an end, and my grandfather's bugging me. I'm like 23, and I'm like, well, maybe I should learn what they're doing, because I had no idea what they did. I thought they put suits on and got paid or something. Right. I didn't know what they were doing. And I went and did that. You know, I felt I was kind of at a dead end musically a little bit, and
looking for a change.
Something
different.
Just didn't know what was. You know, didn't know where I fit in or anything like that. And
right.
My grandfather, who I really adored, and so I did that, and then I worked for them for a couple years, and then when I was in New York training, the guys that ran a trading desk up there for the company we worked for. Offered me a job, and I always wanted to live in New York. I'd been there when I was 6, went to the World's Fair, and loved the subways and all that stuff. So they offered me a job, and I took it. I think probably upset my family a little bit, but
to move away from New Orleans,
yeah, and to their business. But you know, their business was sales, and I'm not a great salesman, and certainly not at 20, whatever I was, 25,
right.
Didn't feel comfortable selling stuff to people, and so they offered me a job in the money markets, and so I was a bond trader eventually.
Okay, a bond daddy. They
bond
used to call
daddy.
Them.
Yeah, I was never a daddy with the bonds, but I was a bond baby, maybe.
Okay. All right, so you're up there.
You're not a bond girl, though.
No, not a bond girl. But never met one. I would like to.
I love the bond girls.
Yes.
Man.
like those themes.
Apparently, the new James Bond is going to be a woman.
Really?
Did you hear about this?
I didn't hear
Janet
about.
Bond? Is it,
no, it's just going to be 007, but she's going to be a woman.
Well, you know, I saw the last one, and there is a 007 that replaced that. Is like they didn't retire the number.
Right, exactly.
Right, okay. So yeah. Is she going to be the next, the star of the, or that character?
I don't know. Right. Let's hope so.
Interesting, okay.
You know, because women need to get in show business more.
yeah, need more representation.
More roles for women.
Right.
You know, like Spider-Man, they're going to have Spider-Woman.
Okay.
Batman, Batwoman, Batgirl.
Sure,
Catgirl, whatever. Can,
Catgirl.
I'm not good on the superheroes, but.
I care less.
Who has the attention?
In American Psycho, they're going to redo that with a woman.
Really?
Too. Yeah.
Wow, that'd be interesting.
Could be Psycho.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Which, you know, I'm living like with
the,
one
the
right
Latin
now.
Latin training, all right.
Yeah.
That Newman education paying off.
Finally.
Yeah.
So you're up there during the 80s trading. So are you still working when they have the, was that 87, the black?
Yeah, so I had left 4 months before that. So the bond market crashed in the spring of that year. And I had a position on there that didn't do so well.
Oh, really?
My bosses were not pleased.
No, you're a little bit overextended.
They didn't fire me, but I knew by then that I didn't want to do that.
The writing was on the wall.
And so I left. And, you know, I'd been playing some, because I knew a lot of guys from New England that were in New York. A lot of guys that went to conservatory went to New York. So I knew some of them. And then, and you know how you just kind of, one person leads to another, you kind of circulate through. So
right, you were living in Manhattan at the time?
Yeah, I was lucky to live in Manhattan for 20 years.
Nice.
I loved it. And,
you ran into other New Orleanians. I know like Ramsey McLean was up there during part of that time.
Yep, and I played with Ramsey. Ramsey and Harry did a gig with them and while I was still had a job. And, you know, remember that. And who else from Louisiana? Dickie Landry, I don't know if
Dickie Landry,
he was a long time downtowner there, and I met him and a guy named Richard Peck, who was in the, they were both in the Philip Glass Ensemble, and I played a bunch with Richard, and I don't know, he just kept meeting people, and
so
I left, and you know.
Left what?
Wall Street.
Left Wall Street.
Yeah.
So you wound up just being a musician, playing up there.
Sort of. Yeah. I was. I ended up going back to school to please my mother particularly, and so graduated college. It took about 2.5 years. But I started playing music again, and
so you had a good long run up there all through. You lived.
From 84 to 04.
To 04.
Which was a great time, though. The 50s, 60s, 70s.
And you didn't do one line of
too.
Coke the whole time?
Not in New York, I didn't.
Oh.
Because
in the 80s in New York, man, I lived in New York in the 80s.
Oh, okay.
And that was it, man.
Yeah, it was great.
And cocaine and rap music, that's what that I got into.
Uh-huh. Yeah, when I moved there, rap wasn't even 10 years old. And
it was gorgeous.
It was really cool.
Was
those guys be out on the street, you know, their Rocksteady crew, all these different crews would dance, breakdance in the street.
Oh, yeah. You would just, they'd set the cardboard up and
you'd
see all these crews just breakdance. Yeah. It was a beautiful scene.
Yeah, and rap was, it was funny. It was
hilarious. Yeah. It was great, and it was violent.
Yeah.
And it's even more violent as the years
have
gone
violent,
on.
Back then it was a lot of fun, actually.
It was a lot of fun, yeah.
Yeah.
So you're up there like 20 years, basically.
Yeah.
You start hearing the siren call of New Orleans, the Elephant's Graveyard. I always say, you know, it's like, even if people leave from New Orleans, they always wind up coming back at some point later on.
It seems that way.
A bad thing.
No, it's not. No, I don't regret it. But I loved living there. I ended up doing a lot of New Orleans music there. And I was kind of like, well, I didn't move to New York to do New Orleans music. And some of the music I had written was sort of New Orleans music, and it didn't really seem to me to fit in New York so much. Mm. And I don't know. If I played clarinet, I may never have left because, you know, moving stuff around, like you know, I was there from the age of 25 to 45. So when you're 45 and it's 20 degrees out and you got to move drums and get a cab and things like that, like
right,
it kind of gets old, you know.
Now, at some point you start playing a lot of piano, huh?
I started playing a little bit piano up there. I mean, a lot of piano. You know, I get to play piano here.
I play
every weekend with a great singer, St. Anthony. But I started, in my 30s in New York. Okay. I had a piano in my house, and
that you worked at, and
you're still working at it. Still,
sure.
And I was 45, like I'd been moving stuff around. It was I was still in a couple bands that I really loved, but I was sick of doing other jobs and doing New Orleans music, and I'd been fortunate to buy an apartment in Tribeca, very cheap, and
I was able
to sell it for dear. So I was like, well, I could move to New Orleans, and I think I will, and I did, and it happened in like a couple months.
Wow!
So
because a lot of guys move up to New York to play, and they have to spend so much time feeding themselves and earning money to pay rent that they wind up having no time to play, no time to practice, and you talk to them, you're like, what are you doing? Like, I don't know. Like, they cease to be musicians, even though that's why they're up there.
Yeah, it's a hustle. It's hard, you know. But I was lucky. I always played. And again, I was in a. You had the Hound on, right?
The guy, Jim Marshall. Sure.
Yeah. I was in the band that the guy that got him his apartment and named him the Hound and everything. They had a band, and when he talks about the bar that he went into, that was this guy Jack Smead, who had died just a few weeks before y'all aired that podcast. Anyway, I was in their band, and that was my favorite band, I think. Favorite musical experience over a long period of time.
Right. That's a cool little scene, you know. The Hound is great, you know.
Right.
Like the guy's golden, man.
Right. I think, like, Chris Lackner called me at, like, you know, 7 in the evening. It's like, again, another 20 degree night. He says, you know, I don't feel good. I don't want to do this gig. And like, will you go do it? I'm like, because it's like $30. I'm like, I don't know. He goes, come on, man. And I go, all right. I go down. It's at this old time loft, you know. And this is 94, I think. And they had the internet broadcast on the. It's the first time I saw the internet. It's all text, no images or anything. This woman's running around saying, "Art is a hard cock," and all this stuff, and like, it was quite the atmosphere. Anyway, so they asked me to join their band after that, and we had a 2-night-a-week gig at St. Mark's Bar and everything. I loved it, and we had 2 rhythm guitars and lead guitar, great bass players, percussion, great singer. They all wrote all their songs, and they were kind of like the Rolling Stones of the Lower East Side in a way. Like,
oh, wow. You know, so it was a rock band.
Yeah, it was a rock band, yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Cool.
But the song, they wrote great songs.
Nice.
You know, they're crazy people. Like,
yeah.
They were doing coke. I was not.
Right.
But that kind of petered out over time, and you know.
You missed your family. New Orleans.
I didn't miss my family that much.
No, okay.
Don't ever listen to this. I still can't explain it.
Yeah.
And like I said, if I'd played clarinet, I might have stayed, you know,
right,
or trumpet or something.
Uh-huh.
But
more portable.
But I was also there at a great time. You know, when I lived downtown, it was empty, and it was awesome. I mean, I'd walk around 3 at night. It was very nocturnal, and it was like I owned the city, and it was barren. By the time I left in 04, it was pretty crowded. There was a lot more people. It wasn't the same. It was a lot richer.
Right.
You know, it was a very... I wouldn't say cheap, but it wasn't luxurious. Let's put it that way.
See, when I was there in 86, it was pretty much the end of like the taxi driver period where the piss and the urine,
right.
All that shit in the subways.
Which I loved.
Yeah. I was there and the rats were there and all that.
Yeah, yeah.
Kind of
well, the
stuff.
Rats are still there. But.
Yeah. And then I came back. About 91, and I think Giuliani had come in and cleaned up everything, and like everything was getting Disneyfied and stuff like that. So it was no more. I mean, the subways were like safe.
Yeah. The graffiti was gone. I loved
it.
It was weird for me
because I was there for 1 year, 1986, and to me it felt like Taxi Driver still. Mm-hmm.
It still was like that. And particularly where I live, there was nobody around.
And then when I came back about 5 years later, it was like gone. It was like, what happened? And
nothing lasts forever.
Right, that's true, especially there.
And so you had a little bit of a nest egg from your real estate wheeling and dealing up there. And so you come back to New Orleans to play music.
Well, I came back to New Orleans actually to take a break at first. So I would go back to New York every 3 months and still play with those guys and with this other band I was in called Mule Bone. And just, again, see where I was. You know, I didn't... Also at a musical dead end kind of at that point. Like, I didn't know, you know, exactly what was going to happen.
You're a sensitive boy. You react to your circumstances.
Very sensitive, Renee.
It's true. What I always like about you.
I don't know. But I almost moved back after Katrina. And and I kind of wanted to shift to playing percussion instead of drums because that's what I had done in this other band, Mule Bone. I found an apartment again. I was going to move back. And then I did a gig at the Maple Leaf with Tom Fitzpatrick and came home and backed into the driveway I had and left my stuff in the car. And I was like, no, I'm not going back. I'm not schlepping in New York again. So that was the final, you know.
Right, right. Now, had you known Tom Fitzpatrick
since the 70s.
Okay.
And we still play together once a month at Dos Jefes.
Man, he still plays so great.
He does. He has great sound on all of his horns.
Yeah. We had him on the podcast. I love that guy, man. I've known that guy since I'm 15 years old. Uh-huh. Again, that's one of the cool things about New Orleans, man, is, you know, like this continuum of guys who... You know, they come and they go, but there's a thread that runs through all of it.
For sure. And it was funny coming back here and then playing with somebody like 25, 30 years later than the last time I played with him. And, it was the same. Like, you know, it's like it was like, really cool. Like, you know, it's like, oh. And it felt easy. Like, it felt natural, you know. You didn't have to, you know, in New York, you got to adjust a lot. You know, but when you play with somebody that, even if you hadn't seen him, like I said, in 30 years, it was very... comfortable.
We have the same vocabulary. Yeah. We have the same
similar accents and
right. Well, I mean, musically speaking.
Yes. We've heard a lot of the same things. You know, in New York, you'd assume somebody knew something about New Orleans when they didn't. You know, and a lot of guys knew rock much better than I did, and you know, so there was a lot of. But here, it's easier to connect with those things.
Right.
With other musicians.
I know nowadays you do a fair amount of stuff on Bourbon Street, huh?
Yeah, well, I played there today with Dave's Cranston's son, Austin. And,
okay.
Who's fantastic.
Second generation of the Clempire, the Clements there. Yeah, Austin and
Austin
Tyler.
Is ridiculous. Tyler's ridiculous. Yeah. They're both great.
Bass player and drummer.
Yeah, and piano player. They both play great piano.
Yeah.
Much better than I do.
Oh, okay. I haven't heard
mothers.
Either one.
And anyway, yeah, so...
Now, Bourbon Street.
Yeah, Bourbon Street. In the day.
That's when you like to play Bourbon Street during the daytime?
Yeah, it's great, actually. I love it.
So I worked Bourbon Street during the day, like when I was playing with Alex Chilton. We did several months at Papa Joe's there, and right on Toulouse. And I recently played a gig with this guy, Rob Davis, who I think
Rob, I was playing with Rob today. I was going to say that.
At that same club. So that used to be Papa Joe's.
Oh, well, no, we were playing. We play outside at Cafe Beignet.
Oh, okay. All right. Different place.
300 block, yeah.
But the gig that I played with Rob Davis.
Oh, he mentioned that. He said that you.
I walked in. I was like, oh, fuck, this is the exact room.
Uh-huh.
Can't remember what it's called now, but it's right there at Toulouse, you know. Like,
oh, I know which place you're talking about. It's the Funky Parrot, I think, is what it's called. Yeah, or it used to be.
Right,
I don't
next
know.
To that or something. But yeah, anyway, nothing ever changed.
I don't want to confess to too much intimate knowledge of those establishments.
Now, you know, we've had Frenchman Street has started... flourished, gone to seed. Mm. Recently, I had someone we both know, great musician, mentioning how Bourbon Street is so much better than Frenchman Street for a musician. This is his point of view. He said, because at least Bourbon Street admits it's a hustle.
Uh-huh.
Frenchman Street is still operating under some sort of illusion that this is art, you know?
Uh-huh. Well, the gig that I do out there is with Rob Wagner is one of them. I do two or three shifts a week, which are four-hour shifts. Two of them are with Rob Davis and Chris Cenac, Pizza Man, and the others with Rob Wagner. And we play whatever we want. And it's not super loud, and we're not playing. We play whatever. And it's really great, actually.
Yeah.
I really enjoy it. And we play for the whole world out there. So,
right.
You know, you really see how people respond to music they haven't heard before, which is awesome. So most of the other gigs on Bourbon Street, you do have to play stuff that people know. And so it's during the day, and I love playing in the day. And I don't have to bring anything, just drumsticks. And I mean, it's great.
You can play other gigs at night if you want, or not have to go down there among all the
I mean, I'm lucky, you know. And it was Kevin's gig before he died and stuff. So, you know.
Kevin O'Day.
So.
Man, a guy I wish we had gotten on the podcast. Mm-hmm. You know, the old guys, I feel a sense of urgency to get on.
What are you saying, Renee?
But like Kevin O'Day, never in a million years I need to, you know, move with haste to get Kevin on.
No.
Goes to show you, man.
Yeah.
Now, I love Rob Davis.
Yeah.
You know, Rob Davis was the sound man for the Iguanas.
I know.
And I knew he played music and he recorded music and stuff. I had no idea he was such a good band leader, such a good keyboard player until the last couple of years, man. I played a few gigs with him as a band leader. I fucking love playing with that guy.
Yeah, great. I hope we do some together. And he knows like 500 songs. And
I know.
He's ridiculous. And,
I know. Yeah. And super positive and a great front man.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah. I love playing with him. And
and who was the other guy you play? Oh, Rob Wagner.
Yeah. Rob Wagner, who I love his music. He's written a ton of great stuff, and it's really fun to play.
Right.
And again, you know, we're playing instrumental music there for people that have never heard it. I mean, the whole thing is his originals, and it really goes over, and that's really cool to see, you know. So I'm lucky to have those. I really like them. So.
Yeah, man.
You know. And again, it's in the day, like. What's a musician doing in the day?
Right.
You know?
We played a few Ingrid Lucia gigs together.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I was still working with Ingrid.
I knew her from New York. I didn't, you know.
You knew her from New York?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. And one of the things I liked about Ingrid's band is she always had great musicians on the band.
Mm-hmm.
And I met people on that band who had lived here their whole lives. I'd never met them, which is crazy because you'd think...
Yeah.
I've been doing this since I'm 13 years old. I would have met everybody.
Right.
There's so many musicians
there. Really are.
Here.
Yeah. No, there's plenty I haven't met still.
Well,
and played with that I'd love to play with.
Well, nowadays you got more people coming in every week. So it's not even talking about the newcomers.
No,
just
I wasn't talking about them.
That have been here. You know, like Carl Abudo.
Right.
Like you showed up. I was like, where the fuck have you been? He goes, I've always lived here, man.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. We send each other gigs every so often, Carl and I.
I
think with that gig we did, I think it was the first time I'd played with Cranston. You know, that was one of those things where, like, I hadn't played with Cranston in over 20 years, probably 30 years, and we did an Ingrid gig together.
Yeah.
There it was. Oh, cool, you know. Since then, we've done a bunch of gigs. But, you know, so.
Nice. But then the time I saw you recently was Nicky Sonsenbach's Memorial.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So we had Nicky on the podcast, you know, just... He passed away maybe like 3 months later.
Yeah, it was a great
something.
Job you got him on there.
Boy, so then. Glad we
I
got
didn't know
him
he
on.
Was that sick. I had no idea.
And, you know, for a guy like Nicky Sonsenbach, who had done so much in his life musically in New Orleans, touched so many people, if you go look him up on the internet, there's not a whole lot there. Just, you know, for whatever reason, guys don't get documented. They don't, you know. The Troubled Men podcast on Nicky Sonsenbach is the... greatest, I mean, the largest repository of information on Nicky that exists.
Wow.
I mean, maybe you could dig something up.
Uh-huh.
Maybe if you go back to the microfiche of Thomas Picayune or...
No, he had great stories too, man. That was a really entertaining podcast.
Man, what a guy. So so you knew Nicky...
Yes, like I said, from when I was 15, you know, first place I saw a clavinet and I said, ooh, I want one of those. And, you know, it was like, it was a really hippie scene, you know,
right.
And, you know, a lot of cannabis and like I was like a little kid, you know, like, and that's how I met, again, met Cranston and Dave and Scott Goodow, all these people, and
Scott Goodow,
awesome.
What a tremendous talent.
Yeah,
man.
Seriously, incredible. And you know, it's weird. Then, so when I left here, I moved to New York in '84. New Orleans was really kind of dead then. You know, it was really before Frenchman Street. I think the Dream Palace was there. I think Snug Harbor. I think it was called Marigny then. And you know,
you
all
shoot
these Bourbon
a cannon
Street
down,
kids.
Yeah. Down Frenchman Street, and not hit anybody. Yeah.
And I mean, I played at the Absinthe Bar, and which was the best place on Bourbon Street to play then. Right. You know, and like, but it was weird. It was like a real trough.
Right.
The World's Fair had been a bust.
Low ebb. Yeah, I was talking to the other a few weeks ago about how I remember like in 81 or 2, people going, man, if we could just hang on till the World's Fair gets here, we're all going right. to be rolling in
exactly.
dough.
It didn't quite work
didn't
out that
pan
way.
Out. Yeah.
And it was funny to see from afar, like this city kind of blossom again musically. You know, the French Street come, and I think a lot of it actually had to do with these music schools, with UNO and Loyola, and people coming from out of town, and like, you know, maybe you were here, I wasn't, but it really is weird how it revived itself, you know.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it, it's not just the music schools, because that was almost kind of incidental. It's just like locale, like you open
rent.
Low rent and
cheap
locale.
Rent, I should say. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Or you have like Cafe Brazil, which winds up being kind of an anchor club there on the revitalization of Frenchman Street.
Mm-hmm.
People start playing and just kind of develop a scene. It's so interesting the way these things organically happen.
Yeah.
You know, it seems like it's some kind of organized you know, movement, but it's not. It's
right.
only
no, no,
like
it wasn't at all.
In hindsight.
No. Right. And, you know, I thought it was not going to come back, you know, but it came back stronger, really. And you know, and New York at the same time just kind of was going downhill, you know.
It prices
you play
the musicians
all the time,
out.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
And DJs, you know, and like that changed everything, you know.
Times change, people change,
right.
Tastes change. Yeah, man. Well, so glad you're back down here, Charlie. It's a thrill to have you back. I feel like, you know, we got you back.
For better or worse, I'm happy to be back.
Yes.
And lucky to be back. So.
Yes, we all are. Well, seems like a podcast.
Yeah,
huh,
okay. Thank you very much, man.
Thank you, man.
For showing up.
Yeah, yeah. And as always, in the Troubled Nation and the Troubled Men podcast, we like to say trouble never ends.
But the struggle continues.
Indeed.
So good night.
Good night.
Just sorrow be mine. Just sorrow. I woke up in your arms, yeah. Surprised in no time how you matter to me. I don't care what clothes you wear today. Just want your lips so serious. Blue, I had so dirty dancing time. Time can fade away. Old newspapers out of date. Your name's a headline. Just sorrow be mine. Your legs strong and smooth wrap around me. Psychic heart attack. Take me to the mat. What you doing to me? It's worth a try. What you gotta say? Long distance lover running for today. Blue and so dirty dancing time. tomorrow I woke up in your arms. Yeah, surprised in no time how you matter to me. I don't care what clothes you wear today, just want your lips so serious. Blue-eyed soul, dirty dancing time. Sorrow be mine, just sorrow be mine.